You've discovered TalkZone.com, the best in internet talk radio.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Hi, I'm Hub Arkish, and along with Eric Edholm, it is our pleasure to welcome you to this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly, where every week you get everything there is to know in the world of professional football, as well as all the news, scoops, and rumors before they happen.
We caught up with several players talking about the collective bargaining agreement and their hope for a new deal.
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Hi, I'm Hub Arkish, publisher and editor here at Pro Football Weekly, and along with senior editor Eric Edholm, it is our pleasure to bring you this week's edition of the Pro Football Weekly radio show. And it's getting a little tougher as the weeks roll on, folks. We tape late in the week. We were within several hours of the deadline between the NFL and NFLPA as to what would come next as we put this program together. But the bottom line is that there has been so much discussion amongst players, amongst coaches, amongst fans, without a whole lot of hard information getting out there. Now, we're going to know soon enough whether there is a deal, whether there is an impasse, a lockout, decertification. We will bring that all to you as soon as we can with some detail behind the facts. For now, had a unique opportunity this past week to visit with a number of players. Eric represented Pro Football Weekly at the Ed Block Courage Awards in Baltimore, an annual event that draws between 1,500 and 2,000 fans out. And Eric, for a great cause, and what it is each of the 32 teams votes the player on their club in that season who was the most courageous member of that ball club. And so you had kind of, as I say, a unique opportunity to visit with a number of players as they kind of got up against this deadline with collective bargaining.
Yeah, it was great to talk to all the guys. Like you said, they overcame some kind of adversity, whether it was an injury, a death in the family, some unusual circumstances. But these guys are all pretty focused on getting back to football. They'd obviously like to see a new deal. We talked to several of them about that this week.
Marty Morningweg is the offensive coordinator in Philadelphia and was voted the Pro Football Weekly and Pro Football Writers of America Assistant Coach of the Year in the NFL, and we present that award each year at the Ed Block Dinner. And Eric had a chance to visit with Marty on a number of subjects, but it was kind of interesting to get his take from a coaching point of view of what these protracted negotiations might be doing to people around the NFL.
Oh, well, there's no question we're optimistic, and none of us really know. There's probably, eight or ten guys that really know what's going on. So we really pay very little attention to that. It may sound strange, but we go about our business. If something happens one way or the other, then we'll adjust. We have a bunch of different plans. And then if something happens, we're ready to go. And I think the teams that are ready to go may have a little bit of an upper hand.
You know, and it's interesting to hear Marty say some folks aren't paying a lot of attention. Cedric Benson, very well-spoken young man. I got to know a little bit in his days in Chicago. And his comments on the whole CBA mess is he's not sure that anybody's that concerned with what he thinks about it.
I have, you know, my opinion or nothing has no decision on the outcome or anything like that. So I hope those guys get it all worked out so I can go back to work.
We all do too, Cedric. And Brian Williams, a cornerback for the Atlanta Falcons, he's one of these players really in a unique position and kind of understated it because his contract was not renewed by the Falcons. That doesn't mean it won't be, but he's out there in this free agent pool, these kind of faceless, homeless guys who until they get a deal doesn't know what to make of it, but he seems to have some confidence it's going to work out okay.
I think they'll eventually get it done. I mean, it would be something to see if we didn't play football. I think both sides will come together and work everything out, and hopefully we can be ready to play for the fans when it's time to go.
Now, you got Tampa Bay Buccaneers running back Ernest Graham, who really, apparently he saw it coming. He heard it building, and his take was, hey, we knew it had to happen. Now let's see if we can figure it out.
You know, it's the ultimate team game. It represents the world and what the world is going through, the best of any other sport. So, you know, right now I think, you know, of course we had to come to this. You know, it's part of the business. But, you know, when we get past the business, you know, we have to understand that it's a lot bigger than that and find a way to move forward.
You know, Eric, I find it interesting to hear Ernest say it had to come to this. Now, I think as media, we sense this. We've seen it coming for 2 years. But we can also step back as just everyday human beings and say, but why did it have to come to this when the answer seems so obvious?
Well, he also plays the Buccaneers, and we know the Glazers are the owners of the Buccaneers, and certainly one of the people out of the teams that wanted to cut costs and increase revenue and all those things. And so, yeah, I mean, obviously a lot of progress has been made recently on this thing. It's amazing that it's taken this long to get to this point. They can make so much progress in 1 week, and yet 2 years before this, it seemed like they were complete loggerheads.
Now, you know, some players believe it had to happen. There are other players out there who don't really understand it. Jason Hansen is a veteran place kicker for the Detroit Lions, and he doesn't seem to be quite so sure why it had to happen.
I don't get big business, you know, and how that works. You think you could just sit down and say, hey, what's fair, and let's do it. But that's what you argue about is what's fair, and I sure hope that they work it out and that we play, and we'll see.
And some players even a little more vocal in their concerns and beliefs as to, well, why did it have to happen? Should it be happening? Listen to what Kansas City Chiefs punter Dustin Colquitt had to say.
In this day and age, there's so many problems worldwide and in our country, and I think for us to be fighting on, you know, something about money is kind of ridiculous. But they'll get that figured out, and we're coming to agreement. Hopefully it's close. Obviously, I'm part of the working class and want to work and want to be able to do events like this. And I just hope that we have a great product in the NFL, and I hope everybody realizes that. And hopefully we're working close together and getting something done.
Yeah, it'd be nice if all of us in the working class were making $400,000 or $500,000 a year to kick football 16 times a week. But I respect what Dustin said. I get where he's coming from, and was even more impressed with running back and kick returner Leon Washington of the Seattle Seahawks, who took, you know, pains to point out, hey, it's not just the players that are at risk here.
Here's the thing about it, you know, not only the players, the owners, but the fact that, you know, people work in the concession stands at the stadium, that, you know, the people that park cars around the stadium, a lot of people are looking forward to that income each year. And so it's just one of those things that we have to get this thing together.
Panthers offensive tackle Jordan Gross, I guess, really summed it up best, somewhat simply, but he is where I suppose we all are right now.
I'd hope we get something done. There's a lot of jobs at stake, both the players, the owners, and just throughout the stadium, throughout the league. So I think it's important to get it done. We're ready to play, and you just hope for the best.
You know, Eric, just a sampling of some of the guys that were award winners and that Pro Football Weekly got to visit with at the Ed Block Courage Award dinners. And it strikes me that the bulk of the players don't seem to want to get too invested in it one side or the other, don't want to get caught up in the acrimony of it. They just want a deal and they want to play football.
It was interesting to talk to these guys. Some of them off the camera admitted, you know, that they hadn't talked to their player reps. They hadn't heard a lot of progress. You know, you heard what Leon Washington said, the important point to point out that there are more people in this thing than just the owners and the players. And I talked to a number of volunteers at the event who are Ravens employees, and they said, look, we're waiting on pins and needles too. But a lot of these guys, they've just kept from afar, and they really haven't delved too much into it.
Folks, I can tell you, regardless of the outcome of the mediated sessions in Washington, D.C., and where the players and owners end up and how quickly they got there or they get there, the overwhelming sense we get from people around the NFL is it comes back to that NFLPA commercial that wasn't allowed to air during the Super Bowl. It just said, let them play, and that's what we're hoping will happen sooner rather than later. We've got more Pro Football Weekly coming up for you right on the other side of this very quick commercial break. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. Hub Arkish and Eric Edholm with you in studio. We are now joined on the line by our associate editor, Dan Parr. And Dan covers, amongst other teams, the NFC South, specifically the Carolina Panthers. And it's interesting, with all the focus on the CBA by so many who love the NFL, most teams are seriously thinking football. They can't do much with free agency, but they know that they've got to focus on the NFL college draft. That happens no matter where the CBA ends up or goes. And nobody more focused than the Carolina Panthers because they've got the first pick. And, Dan, you know, I wouldn't say we're hearing that it could be Cam Newton, but we are hearing that they know they got a quarterback issue and they're going to take a very hard look at the kid, aren't they?
Yeah, they're doing that right now, Hub. They were at his pro day workout, and their reaction from that, you know, Ron Rivera said he looked better than he did at the combine. So they've seen improvement from that point to the pro day, and they're going to follow that up with a private workout, according to reports. So one of several teams is going to have a private workout with Cam Newton before the draft. So while, like you mentioned, we're certainly not here to project that Cam Newton's going to the Panthers at this point, but they are taking a good long look. And they're not convinced that they have the quarterback of the future on their roster.
Well, tis the season for misdirection, Dan. I always feel like about 85% of the information that comes out, at least not the information that we print, but a lot of the information that comes out around the NFL is a smokescreen. And I really feel like the Panthers may not be taking Newton at one. Either they're going to go in another direction or they're going to trade the pick. Is that possible? I mean, do you think they would, are they feigning this interest in Newton to drum up some interest in the pick?
You know, I think they don't mind if some teams do that are very interested in Newton do get the impression that they're, you know, considering taking him with that first pick. And if it drives up trade interest, Marty Herney would love to take some phone calls on that subject, I'm sure. But we know how tough it is to move down. Teams aren't willing to give up what it takes usually to get up to that number one overall choice. And I think they're going to entertain this possibility of Newton seriously. I think they're going to take a good look at him, do their due diligence, find out if he's a fit. And if not, they have a lot of nice other options to use at that first pick because they do have needs elsewhere. Could they go in the direction of corner with Patrick Peterson? Could they address the defensive line with, you know, one of the top defensive tackles or defensive ends in this draft? Daquan Bowers has been linked to them for a while now. You know, I don't know. I think it's a possibility that they do end up with Newton, but a very outside chance still at this point.
Well, it's interesting. While they have plenty of needs, and they do have Jimmy Clausen, who they invested a high pick in last year, and of course Ron Rivera has said Clausen will get a chance to compete for the job. That's as much as he said, so it's clearly not his. Eric earlier this week had a chance to visit in person with Jordan Gross, their outstanding offensive tackle, and asked about the quarterback situation. Dan, you can tell me in a minute. Does this sound like a ringing endorsement to you?
Quarterback's a tough position. You know, you get a lot of accolades and you get a lot of criticism, and it's all well deserved because you're the guy that's throwing the ball and has the most impact on the game. Was Jimmy ready to play last year? I don't know. I think it's a dream scenario. You would do like Aaron Rodgers did and come in and under a Hall of Fame quarterback and learn and then get the reins handed over to you and just succeed. That wasn't the case. You know, I think Matt Moore and Clausen can both fight for the spot next year, and it's definitely an open competition. And if we bring somebody else in, be a veteran or another rookie, you know, it's yet to be seen. But it was a tough year for everybody, and, you know, especially quarterbacks.
You know, it was interesting, Dan, what we didn't hear was me asking the question. I gave Jordan every opportunity to maybe make some excuses for Jimmy Clausen. He really didn't seem to do so, did he?
You know, he didn't throw him completely under the bus, but did anybody hear one complimentary thing in that answer about Jimmy Clausen? I mean, that spoke volumes to me. This is a veteran guy who had, you know, a chance to come out and say, you know what, yeah, there are some things that were said about him that were unfair, and I think people went a little too far in their criticism of him. He was in a tough situation. He admitted it was a tough situation, but he doesn't express any sympathy for Clausen. He pretty much said any criticism a quarterback gets, Clausen included, is deserved.
Well, and Dan, everything we were hearing second half of last year, that there wasn't a less popular guy in that locker room than Jimmy Clausen. So, number of issues for the Panthers to deal with. Whether Clausen can learn both off and on the field remains to be seen. I personally can't imagine Cam Newton being the number one overall pick in this draft. I can't really see him in the first round, but that's just me. Interesting to see what the Panthers do with the pick. Now, a happy locker room, a positive situation. Right now, Arthur Blank appears to be feeling like he's got his team set for the long run.
It's interesting because they're coming off a really disappointing playoff loss, and you know, they're in the direction towards the end of the season towards extending the contracts of Mike Smith and Thomas Dimitroff. They ended up doing both, but after that loss, there were some questions. You know, would Blank come out and show faith in both these guys who have done a fine job so far in terms of turning the Falcons around and coming back from a really difficult 2007 season to have three consecutive winning seasons, something this franchise had never done before. And now he's done both. Smith's extension came back in February, and then this week Dimitroff's extension was announced. So they feel pretty confident that these are the two guys to continue leading this team. And the pressure's rising, though. They expect this team to come through in the postseason, and that's the next step.
You know, the interesting thing, Dan, before we get you go, is when you look at that disappointing hammering by the Green Bay Packers in Atlanta, and yet a team with no glaring weaknesses, where do they, the number one seed in the NFC, hope to get better quickly?
I think we knew that there were weaknesses, but they were not glaring, like you say. But there are things they definitely need to address. I think speed on both sides of the ball is something Thomas Dimitroff has pretty much said that's what they're looking for. And I think in terms of the position, which he hasn't been as clear about, I think defensive end has to be a spot they look. I think wide receiver is something that's under consideration. Do they do anything at corner? They have some nice talent there, but they could use potentially a new nickel back. There are some places that they definitely have to shore up to compete with the likes of a Packers team that is very explosive.
All right, thank you very much, Dan. We're going to take one more quick commercial break here. We've got our other Dan coming up, the executive editor at Pro Football Weekly, Dan Arkush, with some NFC West way we hear it in just a moment. Yeah. I keep wanting to say it's Ozzy, and Randy Meyer, executive producer, pointed out to me it's actually not, but that's okay. We'll have some Ozzy for you later. I'm Hub. He's Eric. We've got Pro Football Weekly for you, and we're joined by our executive editor, Dan Arkish. And Dan, in Seattle, by mid-season, three-quarters of the way through, it was all but a foregone conclusion Matt Hasselbeck would be moving on. The playoff charge, all but a foregone conclusion Matt Hasselbeck would be back for at least one more year. Now, with all the other uncertainty around the NFL, it looks like Hasselbeck's situation in Seattle is really unclear, too.
It really is, Hub. You know, it was looking like a slam dunk when Pete Carroll said a few days after their season ended that, you know, he was Hasselbeck was a top priority to re-sign. But it just hasn't happened yet. Our sources still think it probably will if they can just agree on years. And I think at this point, Hasselbeck is interested in possibly dipping his foot into the free agent waters at whatever time there is free agency to maybe improve his leverage a little bit.
Well, let me ask the obvious question. The Minnesota Vikings have gone from everybody's sexy pick to everybody's thinking not much happening there. But if you were to plug a veteran quarterback right back in there, I mean, I got to believe there's a few teams like that who might have a real interest in a free agent Matt Hasselbeck.
Absolutely. There are some teams right there in the NFC West that I think would have a pretty good interest in him, too. So I think it's a smart move on his part to just see what type of interest there might be in him.
Yeah, for what I'm hearing, the Tennessee Titans might be on one of those teams. They're kind of one of those in limbo clubs as well. But, again, it could probably use a steadying force at quarterback. But I'm curious of what the Seahawks might do, Dan, because they spent a bounty to get Charlie Whitehurst last year, and obviously at some point he's going to factor in as their starter. If Hasselbeck were to leave, though, do you foresee a veteran coming in, possibly a free agent or somebody via trade, or is it more likely they'd go the rookie route?
Well, there has been a lot of talk about the Seahawks being interested in Kevin Kolb via trade. Those are rumors that don't go away, Eric. And, you know, I could see him being a fit in this new offense under Daryl Bevel that is just pure West Coast and emphasis on those short strikes. That Kolb would seem to be a pretty good fit there. So I think that would be an option they would look at. The problem with Whitehurst is that he's not a good fit in that type of a scheme. He throws a beautiful deep ball, but his shorter routes are very inconsistent. You know, there are some people that think that the Seahawks might have an interest in like a Jake Locker, who's played right down the road there with that 25th pick, but he too has accuracy issues. So, you know, out of all the options short of Hasselbeck, I would think Kevin Kolb might be an attractive one if they could, you know, work something out.
Well, you know, Dan, it's interesting. We were kind of speculating off the air going back and forth about around the NFL, the quarterback problems right now, and if they're, regardless of the CBA situation, a third of the teams or more in the league, maybe as many as 13 if you include Miami and Buffalo, is somewhat unsettled. You know, Cleveland, Colt McCoy, or who knows, Cincinnati, Carson Palmer desperately wants out. I don't know that David Garrard's the answer in Jacksonville. You don't know what's going on in Tennessee. You know, you look at Denver, whether it's Kyle Orton or Tim Tebow, and you get to the NFC, and, you know, you talk about the Washington Redskins. They don't have an answer. The Minnesota Vikings don't have a clue. The Carolina Panthers don't have a clue. Out in the West, as you say, it's almost everybody. Have you ever seen a time in the years you've been doing this when there have been so many unsettled quarterback situations?
I really don't think I have. I mean, like you said, a third of the league, I mean, major question marks in Carolina, Arizona, Washington, Tennessee is a big-time mess. And, you know, you really have to wonder about what the quality of football is going to be like, because everything is going to be shortened if we ever reach a settlement, and teams are going to, you know, be getting going on their off-season conditioning late. And with these unstable quarterback situations, you know, I mean, at the most important position, the football could really be pretty lousy when it starts up again.
Oh, Dan, I think you hit it right there on the head. I mean, we talked about this before, but the fact that Jim Harbaugh sort of sent some ideas out that maybe Alex Smith comes back as the starter, A, that tells you that he doesn't want to compete with 10 other teams looking for quarterbacks this offseason, and B, there aren't that many guys out there. We have four possible first rounders in the draft. We have guys like Kevin Kolb who could be traded, but other than that, I don't see too many starter caliber guys just floating around the league ready to be picked up.
Right. You made a great point there, Eric, about this current rookie quarterback crop. I mean, there's probably maybe four guys, maybe five that could get drafted in the first round, but none of them are anywhere near, I don't think, a Sam Bradford, or a Flacco or Matt Ryan. No, not by any means.
Well, and guys, we're going to talk a lot more about this starting next week when we hopefully have some clarity, at least where the CBA is at today, as opposed to in a month or two or three. Because you look at a Jim Harbaugh, you look at a Mike Munchak in Tennessee. If they don't get their extra couple mini camps, if they don't get OTAs, if they don't get the training camp on time, they've got brand new playbooks and brand new terminology that they haven't discussed with a quarterback. I mean, that would explain why an Alex Smith could be a preferable, option in San Francisco, and why Jim Harbaugh might even end up using, Jimmy Ray's old offensive system for a year, just because they may not have a choice. But that's CBA stuff again, and as we get more clarity, we can get into it. Real quickly, Dan, I want to ask you about one of your other ball clubs, the St. Louis Rams. Everybody and their brother assumes that a wide receiver goes to them at number 14. You're hearing not so fast, my friend?
Absolutely. Especially if Julio Jones gets plucked away before that 14th pick, which is quite possible. On the surface, you wouldn't think that defensive end is a glaring need for the Rams. I mean, both James Hall and Chris Long did a pretty good job last year, but Hall is 35 years old. I don't think you can expect him to continue playing at the high level that he has. As good as Long is, there's still questions about him. And Steve Spagnuolo loves versatile ends. He really doesn't have a solid third end right now, and the crop is so good, I could very easily see him going for a powerful edge guy.
All right, Dan, thank you very much. We've got a bunch more way we hear it about a bunch more NFL teams. We're going to get deeper into it in just a moment. One more quick commercial break for you first. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Hub Arkish and Eric Edholm bringing you the show this week. Wayne Larrabee out. NCAA tourney time. Wayne's doing some basketball the next couple weeks, but he will be back with us a few weeks down the road as we really start to hone in on the NFL college draft. This week, we're talking about everything topical in the NFL today, a lot of way we hear it. We're joined by associate editor Eli Cabaron, and Eli's got the AFC East, and story out of Buffalo, Eli, that really has me puzzled. Chan Gailey, now we keep hearing that they like Ryan Fitzpatrick. I like Ryan Fitzpatrick, too, as a number two. I don't know why he suddenly becomes the guy you can build a winner around. But whether you can or you can't, apparently they've got some real interest in Cam Newton, possibly with that third pick in the draft.
Yeah, GM Buddy Nix was at his pro day on Tuesday, but even more importantly, he and some other people in Bills management dined with Cam Newton and Cam Newton's agents the night before the pro day, and they have shown strong interest in drafting the Auburn quarterback, even though they've said publicly that Fitzpatrick, they have no problem going with him in 2011.
Okay, I got to figure this one out myself, because Buddy Nix, who's been in the league a long time, values character, likes those hard-nosed football types, doesn't exactly seem, to me at least, a perfect fit with Cam Newton. Buddy Nix, many people don't realize, this actually was T.O.'s coach in college. They hated each other, and obviously Nix showed Owens out the door when he was in Buffalo. Is there talk about why the attraction so much with Nix?
I think that Chan Gailey really wants an offensive playmaker under center. And while Ryan Fitzpatrick is a solid quarterback, he's really not an electrifying player like they think Cam Newton can be. I mean, the Bills have a lot of holes to address on defense, which is where conventional wisdom would say they'd go with that pick with Von Miller or Patrick Peterson or someone like that. But Gailey really wants a game-breaking quarterback that he can kind of mold and make his own. And so he has the ear of Buddy Nix, who has then had to force to look at these quarterbacks, and especially Cam Newton, who may not fit that Buffalo culture, like you said, the hard-working type that the Bills kind of want to become, but he is that dynamic player.
You know, Eli, the other interesting piece here, though, it tells me that Buddy Nix and Chan Gailey must feel pretty secure in where they're at, and that Ralph Wilson's going to leave them alone. Because if they were to do this with the number three overall pick, this is a huge risk, a big boomer bust pick for a team with desperate needs on both the offensive and defensive line. I don't know that C.J. Spiller's ever going to be an every down back, and Fred Jackson's always been more of a number two. So many things this team should be doing, in addition to quarterback, that to me, it's just a huge risk to take at number three unless you're feeling awful sure of where you're at.
Well, from what I've heard, they are pretty comfortable in their positions, even though they went 4-12 last season. Ralph Wilson has shown support for both Knicks and Gailey. But like you said, they took a risk last year with C.J. Spiller, even though they already had Fred Jackson and Marshawn Lynch on the roster. And again, this year, it looks to be like they're going away from conventional wisdom and going with the kind of risky pick that can turn out great. But the Bills' track record of first-round picks has just been awful the last decade, and that's one of the reasons they have the longest playoff drought in the National Football League.
All right, Eli, real quick before we let you go, another one of your clubs, the Jets, different kind of quarterback issues. They believe Mark Sanchez is the future. Now, though, he's coming off surgery on that right throwing shoulder. How's he doing?
He actually is rehabbing quicker than they expected. He actually worked out at the University of Colorado Pro Day a couple days ago, throwing to one of his friends, Scotty McKnight, who's a Buffs wide receiver. So he showed off his arm strength in Boulder, and he's rehabbing better than expected. Last offseason, he and some teammates worked out in California, which Rex Ryan illegally attended, but this offseason, they're not sure if that's going to happen because of the whole CBA issue and because he just doesn't know who his receivers are going to be this year.
All right, Eli, thank you much. They're not sure if the workouts are going to happen or if Rex is going to illegally attend again. Every Rex fun I can have, I got to do it. Eli, thank you much. We take a quick break here, and more away we hear it in just a moment. There's Ozzy. For all of you been wondering for two segments, what we're talking about, that was Buck Cherry in segment three. And the one and only Ozzy Osbourne gets us back to Pro Football Weekly right here. We welcome in senior editor Mike Wilkening along with Ozzy Osbourne. There's a lead-in for you, Wilkie. Great to have you back with us again. And we'll talk a little bit about your Baltimore Ravens. Interesting story here. Head coach John Harbaugh, apparently in a conference call with season ticket holders, decided it might be a good opportunity to nip in the bud rumors that quarterback Joe Flacco and offensive coordinator Cam Cameron might be needing a little relationship counseling.
Yeah, and I was asked about it, you know, apparently, and, you know, and said that, you know, that his head coach, or excuse me, an offensive coordinator and his quarterback get along well, and that that's not an issue. And, you know, look, I think obviously when you've got a quarterback and an offensive coordinator, you want them working well together. We know that Joe Flacco wasn't happy that Jim Zorn was let go, that was something that didn't stand well with him. And we also know that Cam Cameron, the responsibility for how this offense is going to go this year, is really kind of wholly on his shoulders at this point, with Zorn being out of the picture and with the idea that this passing game really needs to take a step forward. So obviously the Flacco-Cameron relationship and the productivity of Flacco are issues that are really going to be watched closely here in 2011.
All right, Mike, let me move you on to a strange story out of Cleveland. The Browns have tendered a second-round level offer to cornerback Eric Wright in restricted free agency. Interesting, because this is a guy who really struggled and actually lost his starting job in 2010, and now he apparently has disclosed to the Cleveland Plain Dealer that he was receiving death threats at some point last season. He said, and I quote, "I went from people expecting me to be a top cornerback in the league to receiving death threats," close quote. Obviously pretty scary. What can you tell us about that?
Well, yeah, again, told the Plain Dealer that that was the case and that, you know, reportedly didn't tell the team or anybody about it, just sort of, you know, kind of dealt with it his own way. Eric Wright really struggled last year, obviously, on the field. Didn't, you know, play up to the standard that he'd had the previous season. But the news of the second round tender, I think, is a signal that he kind of fits in still with what they want to do. He's a guy that's on his best, guys, is, you know, a pretty good corner. And the way that Joe Hayden emerged at cornerback last year with Sheldon Brown, likely an effective starter here for maybe a couple more seasons, Browns could have very good depth at corner here in 2011 if Eric Wright rebounds.
Well, clearly, I know why they want him back. They think he's a tough guy because listen to this quote. He says, "As serious as death threat may be, I wasn't going to let a few bad apples ruin the whole tree." I think that shows that this guy isn't scared of being in the spotlight. But what about the rest of the defense, Wilkie? I mean, what are some other spots that they could improve on that side of the ball?
Well, I think the big issue there, Eric, is their front seven is in a bit of a state of flux because they're going from a 3-4, which they've built for several years, to a 4-3. And, you know, they need edge rushers off the edges. They need another defensive tackle to pair with the Taiba Rubin. At linebacker, they think they're in okay shape. Scott Fujita, Chris Gokong, DeKal Jackson look like he's going to be back. But really, that front four, you know, would not be surprising if they look to address that in the draft fairly early. So when it comes down to it, this was a defense that made some strides last year. But now you have a scheme change. So really there's another layer of complexity, I think, added to the mix in Cleveland.
All right, Mike, we've got just about a minute left, but it wouldn't be the 2011 offseason if we didn't talk about the Bengals quarterback situation. Carson Palmer seems adamant about not coming back. Mike Brown has said he will be back. And yet now we learn through the Cincinnati Inquirer, the Bengals had four coaches at Auburn's Pro Day. Now everybody's going to say Cam Newton, but the coaches there, Marvin Lewis, wideout coach James Urban, who was formerly the QB coach with the Eagles, but also D coordinator Mike Zimmer and defensive line coach Jay Hayes, read Nick Fairley. And then we find out that quarterback coach Ken Zampezi was actually at Arkansas's Pro Day, where, of course, Ryan Mallett would be working out. So what is going on there?
Well, I think what's going on is clearly the Bengals have to keep an eye out for the quarterback prospects and kind of look at what options are going to be available to them, either at number four overall in round one or at the top of round two. I mean, this is a team that may have to go on without Carson Palmer. That would mean that they're either going to have to add a quarterback in free agency and or the draft as well. So it makes a lot of sense that they were covering both pro days. Obviously, the scheduling was sort of an issue too. They had to kind of split staff it because, as you know, Auburn and Arkansas had their pro days on the same day. So here are two of the top maybe six quarterback prospects available. And obviously teams had to kind of make sure they had guys at both pro days.
All right, Mike, hang on just a minute. We've got more with Mike Wilkening and Eric Edholm in a moment. We take a quick commercial break. Way we hear it. Where is Tiki Barber going? Maybe only Tiki knows. Pro Football Weekly rolls on, and as we've discussed throughout the show, our very own senior editor Eric Edholm was in Baltimore this week at the Ed Block Courage Award dinners. And Eric, I understand that one of the rumors making the rounds, probably as strongly as any, we've all heard by now that Tiki Barber wants back into the NFL. A little unusual for a 35-year-old running back who's been retired 4 years. We won't speculate as to the reasons. We just believe him when he says he's going to play. And reports that Pittsburgh could be a likely landing spot, but let's dig deeper. Where are those reports coming from?
I would say they're coming from Barber's camp. That's, just sort of poking around and talking to people around the league. And I do know for a fact that the Giants will wish Tiki well and send him on his way. They retain his rights, but as soon as those papers become valid and he re-enters the NFL, if indeed he does, they will not be a Giant. They said they will relinquish his rights and allow him to sign with one of the other 31 teams.
Well, Mike Wilkening is still with us, of course, our senior editor on the AFC North. And Wilkie, the Steelers, one of your teams. Anything at all to these rumors outside of wishful thinking by Tiki's people?
You know, when it comes down to it, you look at the Steelers, they've got Isaac Redman basically as their top backup to Rashard Mendenhall. They like him. Jonathan Dwyer is a guy that they basically held on the roster all last year. Didn't play, sort of a redshirt year, but a real young guy and a guy they liked enough to keep around. I don't know what type of role there would be for Tiki Barber in this backfield. We know Rashard Mendenhall is going to get a lot of carries, and, you know, I just don't know how many touches there are going to be otherwise and what type of role would be available to any backup back in that offense.
All right, Mike, thank you very much. Mike Wilkening, senior editor at Pro Football Weekly. And, Eric, I want to come back a little bit now to your chance to visit with some of the folks with some of the teams that you cover during the week at the Ed Block Award dinners, and particularly the assistant coach of the year, Marty Morningweg. Now, the Philadelphia Eagles, division champs, but a team with a ton of questions, as near as I can tell. And Coach Morningweg told you I guess he acknowledged, yeah, there are some questions.
There's several things. In fact, we just got done with our scheme evaluation, and great, great things, and very pleased with where our offense is. However, there's several things that we can get better at. Sacks. We had an unusual high amount of sacks. Typically, we don't have that many. That's number one. We took some sacks in the red zone, some turnovers in the red zone.
Yeah, it was interesting talking to Marty, and obviously I know him a little bit from away from football and stuff, and you know, this team, as potent as they were offensively, like you mentioned, a lot of issues right now. And I think that the offensive line with new OL coach Howard Mudd is going to go through a transition. He has some different ideas on protections than the Eagles, than Andy Reid did before. you know, I want to know what they do with Kevin Cobb. You know, that's obviously the big question going into the offseason. They could get a lot for him, but it could be one of those situations where, you know, they decide to keep him around because they want to protect their best asset, Michael Vick.
You know, it's interesting. There was a lot of assumption when Coach Morningwick had the year that he did that he'd be a head coaching candidate again. His first stint didn't go so well in Detroit. A lot of people thought Cleveland, maybe he'd interview in Tennessee. I don't think he even interviewed anywhere. Is he pretty much happy in Philadelphia, or did you get any indication if he still aspires to being a head coach again?
He thinks it's going to happen again, you know, and he... You know, talking to some people in Philadelphia and in Cleveland, Marty thought that might happen. Marty thought Cleveland was the situation. He knows Mike Holmgren. He knows, you know, the setup there. There was somebody that, you know, they wanted somebody that understood that offense. Marty knows it as well as anybody. So that was a real strong thing for him. A couple years ago when Mike Nolan wasn't renewed, the thought was that he might get a job offer out there. He's considered college before, so I think he's going to get another opportunity at some point.
Another one of your ball clubs, the Washington Redskins, Maki Kimoiatu, one of the best nose tackles in football when healthy. Hasn't been healthy for a while. Is he going to be a Redskin again?
You know, I asked him. He said, well, I've got another year on my contract. And he said, you know, he was just, you know, waiting to hear from the Redskins. There's been a lot of rumors, a lot of talk about him possibly not coming back, you know, as they kind of remake their 3-4 defense. And they've looked a lot at Baylor's Phil Taylor, one of the best nose tackle prospects in the draft, probably more of a second-round guy than a first-round guy that we'll see. The Redskins have been known to do some strange things, but Kimoiatu, it's not clear whether he'd be back or not.
Von Miller from Texas A&M, kid we've gotten to know pretty well from our involvement in the Butkus Awards, outstanding linebacker in college football, top 10 pick almost for sure, wants to be a Cowboy. He's from that area, played at College Station, but the Cowboys maybe not so interested?
Well, they're playing coy right now, Hub. It's really interesting. You know, he said, I've dreamed of having that star on my helmet, and at the combine, he was hanging around the outside of their meeting rooms and sort of saying, hey, guys, you want to talk to me? And, you know, they've very, you know, sort of politely said, look, oh, we have a local day. We have a day where we bring all the Texas kids or something. So they're doing one or two things. They're either not interested and think Anthony Spencer's going to bounce back opposite DeMarcus Ware, or they're just being real cool about it and trying to do like a Mike Shanahan, Jay Cutler thing and have no contact with him whatsoever, hoping he falls into their laps.
Maybe one of the few guys in the country right now trying to get Jerry Jones at the top of his dance card. Hasn't been a good couple months for Jerry. Hopefully it'll get better. We've got more Pro Football Weekly for you in just a moment.
And now with the publisher's pen, the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish.
You know, Eric, I have found it kind of fascinating over the last few weeks, and now particularly this week, listening to some of the reports you did from the Ed Block Courage Awards, talking to so many top players around the NFL, how unified this union is. I really think they are. I think the owners have badly underestimated what they were getting into and thinking that these guys were just going to belly up and walk away. But also, quite frankly, how uninvested in the whole process some of them are. They're trusting their leaders. They're saying, we need to be treated fairly. We think we've got the people in charge who are going to do that. So we're going to concentrate on getting in shape and being ready to play football when the time comes. I think that's what we want from the players. Now we got to find out if the owners are as unified and going to be as wise and mature about the process. Hopefully we've got good answers soon. We want to give our thanks to everybody involved with the Ed Block Courage Awards for their help with the show this week. Outstanding organization. If you'd like more information about the great cause they're working for, you can find it at edblock.org. As always, our thanks to our incredible executive producer and engineer, Randy Meyer. Our home studio is Syndication Networks. They handle our clearances as well. And most of all, we want to give our thanks to you, our listeners. We appreciate so much your being there. Please be back with us again next week, same time, same station, for more Pro Football Weekly.